Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Sunny Marymeadow podcast. I'm your host, Liz Fidler, and today we're going to throw out a little bonus episode in honor of Easter approaching. I'm going to be blunt with you guys. I recorded this episode 3 times because I just didn't like how it sounded. And I enjoy the storytelling. You guys know that I love telling stories. I am a chatty, conversational person, and I love nothing more than to sit down with a good cup of coffee and chat with people. But I know that this podcast is turning into so much more than just my farm, my brand. I know you guys are getting inspiration for yourselves, and I re-listened to them. I recently was in Brookings, South Dakota, talking to a group of college women, and I listened to the episodes that I had recorded, and I was so hard on myself. I was so critical. I'm like, these are shit. Nobody's going to like them. And I realized that I wasn't sharing the message. I think a story is great, but a story is just a story if you don't learn something from it. And I thought about this Easter story that I'm going to share when my business 3 years ago, when I made 300 wholesale bouquets for Easter, when I had no business doing that. I had no idea how to do that, but I did it anyway. But I want to share what you guys will get out of this episode. And the truth is, it's learning that what is stopping you from doing something big? Is it fear or is it wisdom? And if there's a gut feeling that's telling you not to do something, how to dissect that and decide, is this because it's a stupid idea and because it's going to hurt my business and it's going to distract me from what I want to be doing and my long-term goals? Or is this, I'm just scared and I'm worried and I'm nervous, and how to approach that? So a little timeline of my flower farm, if you've never heard it, and I'm assuming the majority of you haven't, but if you're brand new to the podcast, welcome. Thank you for being here. So in 2020, I started a little farm stand with Josh, who is now my late husband. He passed away that December. So that summer during COVID, I was working as a family practice nurse practitioner, and he was working as, technically his role was VP of core markets. So he was the head of sales for like 20 some counties, and they were all farmers, so ag lenders. And so we had very, very stressful jobs during COVID. My job was stressful because, again, as a family practice nurse practitioner, all of the physicals were being canceled. All of the pre-op appointments were being canceled because elective surgeries were being canceled. People were freaking out because we were canceling mammograms. We were canceling routine screening. And these are things that, you know, someone's like, no, I need my mammogram. My mom had breast cancer. Like, yes, it's routine, but I need that. And just stressful things every single day, trying to calm people down and saying, no, we're not doing those things right now for a couple months. We're just going to hold off. And again, hindsight's always 20/20, but it was very stressful day in and day out, trying to calm other people down and trying to do that. And then Josh's job was really stressful because, one, farmers were trying to get PPP loans, not peddling perishable products, but the PPP loans where they got their business loans at like a 1% or, you know, whatever it was. So they were trying to get those really low interest business loans. And at the same time, a lot of farmers were going through some really hard things, such as the laying hens. So they were, their eggs go to, you know, whatever company, and I'm not going to say any name because I don't want to get sued, but there were entire chicken barns, there were entire hog barns very, very close to our farm. Some of them were Josh's clients or his, you know, people, and they were being euthanized. They were literally killing an entire barn. That was happening all over in the world of egg in COVID because McDonald's didn't need their eggs for their McMuffins or their sandwiches anymore. And so these companies that supplied the food to those restaurants or whatever it might be, they ended up just euthanizing all these barns and all these animals. And it caused such a major disruption. And so we were both stressed out to the max during those few months of COVID. And our reality and our world is very different than other people's reality and other people's experience with it. And I hope that other people didn't have that kind of experience that we had. But ultimately, between that and then my grandma passed away
that June of 2020 in a nursing home, and she went into the nursing home in February and she never had any visitors. She never had any pictures hanging on her walls because the maintenance men couldn't come in because they didn't want to expose her to COVID. And she died without visitors. And I mean, she had people at her bedside when she did actually die. Her children were able to go there, but not her grandkids. None of us were able to go see her. And she was very alone and lonely. And I worked at a nursing home for 6 years, 2 years during high school, 4 years during college while I was getting my undergrad degree in nursing. And so long-term care facilities were not a new experience for me. And I just wanted to do something nice in her memory. And so we started this farm stand and we did bouquets and we had some like canned goods at the end of the driveway, but we sold like 200 bouquets. And for every single flower bouquet that we sold, we donated a second one to a nursing home. And ended up donating over 200 bouquets to nursing homes. It was not a good business model. You got two bouquets with the second one being delivered for $15. So definitely not sustainable in if I wanted to continue doing it. But it was just like a fun little hobby passion project. We weren't really sure where the farm was going to go after that. Again, I had a career as a nurse practitioner. He had a career in lending and he was in leadership there. And it just, you know, when you pencil out the numbers, the math doesn't quite math. And so, you know, we just were having fun with it. And we thought, you know, let's try to convert some of those farm sales to CSAs or subscriptions just to make it a more sustainable model where our customers could just come on a set day and pre-order and prepay. But we didn't really think that we would expand the number of flowers that we grew or the number of customers we had. It just was kind of this fun little thing. And if we could hold on to it long enough until our daughter could take it over and just have something and honestly have a Schedule F on our taxes, if I'm being honest. That was the extent of what we thought about the flower farm. Well, that December, Josh passed away of a heart attack while running on the treadmill. And then the day after the funeral, I found out I was pregnant with our second daughter. And I definitely was going to throw in the towel on the flower farm. I definitely was not going to continue doing this. How was I going to continue doing this? I cut back to 3 days a week as a nurse practitioner, just knowing that, you know, I had all these other things on my plate. And there are a lot of executive things to do when your spouse passes away, especially at a young age. There are so many loose ends. There's so many meetings. If you're interested or curious about those types of things, I have the Bloom and Grow with Liz Fidler podcast where I kind of give insights to those things that while they aren't necessarily enjoyable to talk about, they just make it a little bit more relatable when someone has passed away and you can understand what's going on. But that February, so he died in December, and I didn't tell anyone I was pregnant until March when we were out of the first trimester. I shouldn't say I didn't tell anyone. Like my closest family, my closest friends knew, but we were keeping it pretty hush-hush. And because it was COVID, I was able to just kind of be at home, be alone, that type of thing. So I got an email that February saying, and it was from a guy named Tom Opatz, and he emailed me saying, "Hi, I would like to order 200 bouquets for Easter." And Easter that year was early April. And I remember looking at it thinking, what an a-hole. This is a joke. What a jerk. Like, doesn't he know my husband died? Doesn't he know, like, I don't have flowers in April? Like, what are you doing? And so I was like, what is this? And so I emailed him back and I said, "Hi, thank you for your email. I don't have flowers in April, so I'm not going to be able to help you. And I don't know if you know this, but my husband died and I'm not sure if I'm going to have this business anymore." Like that's what I said back in the email. And he responded back. He's like, "Yep, I know. I was familiar with your husband. He served on the township board. I live in the township. Respectfully, sorry, you know, that happened, whatever. But I really would like to get some flowers to give to nursing homes." He actually owns the business that owned three different nursing homes in central Minnesota. And he said, "We want flowers for all of our residents and we would like you to be the one to do it." And so again, I responded back and said, "Thanks so much, but I don't have flowers in April. I didn't have a high tunnel yet. I do now. 3 years later, I do now, but I didn't at that time." And I said, "Sorry, I don't have any flowers." And he responded back and it was enough of a challenge that it was, again, it was respectful. He wasn't being a jerk, but he's like, "Well, can you get them? How do other people get flowers? Like, there's florists. Like, what do you mean you can't get there? You don't have them?" And at that time, I was like, whoa, okay, now it's a challenge. Now it's a, now he's, you know, kind of challenging me. And for the first time, I was like kind of out of this fog, and it had been 2 months since Josh passed away. And, you know, I responded back. I'm like, well, I'm sure, you know, I can get them wholesale, but they're going to be expensive, meaning they're not going to be $7.50 a piece like they were this summer. And, you know, my little tiny pint jars of flowers that, quite frankly, I'm embarrassed to look back on now. And so I was like, well, they're going to be expensive and whatever. And he's like, yep. Like, can you give me a number? And, you know, it was just this like kind of challenging back and forth. And I was like, oh, I'm going to do this.
Taking a quick break from this episode to ask a very, very tiny favor of you. If you're enjoying this podcast, please hit pause and go and give us a 5-star rating. If you feel compelled or inclined to write a review, that would be so appreciated. But honestly, the rating is all we're asking right now. Podcasts get recommended to people based on downloads and keywords and ratings. And if lots of people are listening and rating it high, then the platforms try to find more people that they think will also like it. So it's a really simple and easy thing for you to do, but it really does mean so much to us. So please consider hitting pause, giving it a 5-star rating, and then coming back and finishing this episode. Thank you.
And so I threw out a number. I'm like, well, this is how much they're going to cost a piece. Not knowing how much wholesale flowers cost, not knowing where I was going to get them. Like, I just threw out a number. I think I said $20 a bouquet, which obviously looking back, I will, you know, my Petaling Perishable Products students know this. Like, there's so many things that go into pricing in the behind the scenes. This definitely wasn't a sustainable model in pricing at the time, but I was like, well, this is what I could do it for. And so he's like, yeah, okay, sounds good. Where do I send the check? And then I went, oh shit. Okay. Now I have 200 bouquets that I need to have in a month and a half, and I have no idea how to do it. And I just accepted, you know, $5,000 or whatever it was to do this. And I didn't think about like one of the facilities is 90 miles away. And how am I going to deliver these? And how am I going to do any of this? But I didn't really care, because honestly, at the time I was in this place of despair. I was in this place of living through my living hell, honestly. Like, here I am, my husband's gone. I'm so excited to be pregnant with the child that we wanted and wanted and prayed for, and we did fertility treatments, and we wanted, of course I wanted this baby, but it was scary because I didn't want another child by myself. That wasn't the plan, so it was scary. And so I just was in this place of, well, it's fine. Like, I could handle this. Like, compared to what I've been through and the life that I'm living right now, yeah, I can handle this. I'll figure it out. And so I, you know, why not? If it's complicated, let's make it even more complicated. So I sent out an email to my email newsletter people, which I had started building that previous fall. And I ended up sending an email out to, I think I had 500 people on my email list at that time, because it was all the people that had like bought flowers from the farm stand or were following me on social media or whatever it was. And so I sent an email out and I said, hey, it's Liz. I'm back. Maybe, possibly. Wondering if anyone wants a bouquet for Easter. This is how much they're going to cost. Let me know if you want one. I didn't even have a way of taking a point of sale at the time. I just said, email me back with the quantity that you would want, and we'll figure out like cash or check at pickup time or Venmo, you know, just let me know. And all of a sudden I had 100 more bouquets signed up that other people were wanting. And then a friend of mine that owns a state farm agency, Tony Hoagland, he was like, hey, I'll take 27 bouquets and we're going to give them to a nursing home down here. So it was 300 total. And I'm like, oh crap, we gotta shut this down. Or, you know, I don't even know what I'm doing. And that was the first time that it really hit me. Oh crap. And so I called my high school best friend. I'm like, so I did something. And she was on the floriculture team with me in FFA in high school. She lived 5 hours away. Her and I have been through a lot. When I was a freshman and she was a sophomore in high school, her mom actually passed away of a heart attack. And it was my mom's best friend. And my mom was the PA on call. And we've been through some deep stuff together. Okay. And so, you know, when Josh passed away, she just took 5 days off of work, came up here, and she like ran the household. When people dropped off food, when people did anything, like, she was just like quietly managing everything. Like, okay, we need more toilet paper. We need this. We need that. Like, she was just like hosting these hundreds of people that, you know, when Josh passed away, and she just was handling it. I don't know how else to describe it. And so I called her. I'm like, well, here's what I did. And she's like, okay, let's figure this out. And she's the smartest, most calm person that I know. And she's like, okay, well, that lady that did your funeral flowers, Tracy at Daisy A Day in St. Joe, call her up, tell her what's going on. She'll help you. She'll help you figure out how to order it. She's like, come up with a recipe. You know, let's do this. And she goes, I'll take Thursday and Friday off of work and of Easter weekend, and I'll come up there and I'll help you. I'm like, okay. So we figure this out. I call up Tracy, tell her exactly what's going on. And she's like, you know, of course, she's like, yes, I remember you. That was 2 months ago when I came in there. And I was obviously very picky about Josh's funeral flowers because I wanted them to look like that summer before. I wanted them to look like my flowers in the summer, flowers that you can get in Minnesota. So I wanted snapdragons and bells of Ireland and sunflowers and, you know, those types of flowers, the Dara, the amaranth. I wanted Minnesota grown looking flowers, even though it was December, because I wanted those flowers on his casket to represent the happy times that we had had that summer. And so she was just, yep, okay, we'll do this. And she came up with, you know, I said, well, let's do snapdragons. She's like, how about instead of snapdragons, you do stock? I'm like, I've never heard of stock. I don't know what that is. And so she just helped me figure that out. I think we did tulips and I don't even remember what else was in it, but very, you know, focal filler. I think we maybe did some liatris as like kind of a spike. But anyway, so then we ordered all of these flowers and they were going to be delivered to her 7 miles away. And then, you know, we were going to have to process them, figure it out. And, you know, we were like, okay, we came up with a plan. We had all of these mason jars that we were going to put in them. We started collecting jars. I started, you know, running the dishwasher constantly. We didn't have water out in the shop where we were going to do them. So we used a garden hose hooked up to the spigot off the house. It was probably 20 degrees outside when we did it. And I remember like being worried that the shop was going to get too cold, which of course it wasn't, and just all of these things. But I had thousands and thousands of dollars worth of flowers. And I also had, you know, and it should have been tens of thousands of dollars worth of flowers, but I did not charge appropriately or, you know, factor all of that in. And people got them for just a few dollars above cost. And, but, you know, I made a few dollars per bouquet and I didn't pay Amanda and I didn't factor in my gas and, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. So, you know, literally 100 hours worth of work went into these between the planning and whatever, but it's fine. It wasn't about that. And that's okay that it wasn't about that. But let's face it, I was in a brain fog and I didn't have fear holding me back because I wasn't scared of anything. I had been through the worst that could happen. And the truth is, I knew that everybody was going to give me grace. If I messed this up, and I didn't, and I wasn't going to, but if I did mess it up and these people showed up, they'd be like, okay, well, we'll help you like cover the cost of the flowers that died because, you know, but what would I do? And it just wasn't a big deal. And what's the worst that could happen? I refunded everyone out a few thousand dollars or, you know, which, yes, that is a big deal. But when something's holding you back, I want you to wonder, you know, is this wisdom or is this fear? And the truth is, I was confident in my ability to figure this out. I have done so many hard things already in my life. You know, I have my doctorate degree in nursing. I have run a marathon. We've fixed up this old farmhouse. I have figured out how to do so many things. So I knew that this was figure outable. It wasn't rocket science. Was it going to be perfect? No. Looking back, are there so many things I would do differently 3 years ago if I had my knowledge now? Of course, but that's not the point. And so, you know, I was living each day one day at a time. I was living in the moment. My pregnancy, I think I knew I was having I didn't find out I was having a girl until 12 weeks because we did a blood test, because we did all this genetic DNA testing, because I was a high-risk pregnancy. So I saw a perinatologist, that's the word, because we didn't know how Josh died. We didn't find out, we didn't get the death certificate until later. We thought it was a heart attack, but then it was like, well, I don't know, maybe he hit his head and maybe he had a hemorrhagic stroke, or you know, maybe whatever it was, we didn't know. He was found dead hours later on the treadmill. And so we did not know how he died because COVID, the autopsy took months and months. And so here I was pregnant with this child that maybe Josh had some weird genetic condition, and maybe my daughter Vidalia has some weird genetic condition, and maybe this baby inside of me has this weird heart cardiac anomaly. And it was just so scary because we didn't know how he died and what those genetics were or whatever. And, you know, it obviously turned out all how it was supposed to or whatever, but I was living each day in the moment because I was taking each day one day at a time because I could not look at the future until I knew that this child that I was carrying was out safe and sound in August. So it's like the farthest I could look into the future was my due date, but not even one day past that. I couldn't even imagine bringing this child home. You know, it was just like, just get to tomorrow, just get to tomorrow. And so I didn't really worry about anything. I didn't worry about, oh, if I do something wrong, I'm going to lose customers. Or, oh, if I do something wrong, this business is going to flop. Like, I wasn't worried about that because I'm not saying that it was a good idea to live that way, but I knew that I was competent in my ability to figure things out. I had already done so many hard things. And to be honest, I had a little bit of a reckless streak that after the whole Easter thing and that summer, yep, no, we got to put this in check a little bit because I can't dive into every risk thinking, well, what's the worst that can happen? Because maybe it is a bad thing for my business, or maybe it is a bad thing for my family or whatever. And maybe there are some unintended consequences that I need to think about. But for the most part, what is holding you back on doing something? Is it fear? Is it wisdom? You know, my favorite part about where I'm at in my business now is I am in the stage of maybe, which is so cool. I feel like when you first start a business, those first few years, you just need to move the needle. You just need to get some revenue. You just need to make some money. You need to pay the bills. You need to reinvest in yourself. You need to keep going and bring in the revenue because you need to figure out what your target product is. You need to figure out what the most profitable thing is going to be. And it's going to be unique to you and your own business. So you just have to keep saying yes. So if someone asks you, hey, we're having a craft sale. Hey, we're having a pop-up. Hey, do you want to bring some flowers here and try to sell them? And you're doing it not necessarily for the sales, but maybe you can hand out a bunch of business cards and marketing and whatever it might be. But, you know, you just have to say yes. And maybe it's something that, oh, this isn't what I want to do, but someone asked me to deliver flowers to XYZ place and they said they were going to pay $100 for a really big bouquet and, you know, delivery fee and, you know, but it's taking me between delivering it, making it, whatever. It's 3 or 4 hours of work. And yes, $100 bouquet sounds awesome. But when that's the only thing you do that day, like $100 a day, 4 or 5 days a week, you can't survive off of that. That's barely even minimum wage if you're doing that instead of working. If it's a side job and it's extra cash, but if you want this to be your long-term business, that's not enough money to make per day to run a business with all of the expenses that go behind the scenes of having it. And so it's, you know, trying to look at, is this a good opportunity for me? So at first you have to say yes all of the time. And then what's really exciting was in the last year or two, I got to start saying no. I got to start saying, I'm sorry, that seems like a good opportunity, but I just don't need to do that. And it doesn't align with my long-term goals. I'm going to say no. That's not the right choice for my business. No. And sometimes no is a complete answer. You don't have to give them a full description. I mean, if it's might be harmful to the relationship, then you want to be respectful and say no, thank you, instead of just no. But yes, and then no. But then where I'm at now in my business, which is so exciting, I get to start saying maybe again, because my flower farm is it's becoming a well-oiled operation, and I'm excited. It's predictable. We're not adding a ton of new products. We're streamlining the processes for how we do things. We are putting systems in place. You know, if someone emails about this, then I have an assistant that sends them an email back and says, hey, fill out this form. And then she screens it, vets it, and then she puts it in my folder that says Liz to open. Like, I only go to my Liz to open folder. I don't look at the inbox. I shouldn't say that. I have Liz to open and Liz to open ASAP. I have, you know, a team that works here on the farm, and they know what their tasks are. And we know what I need to be doing with, you know, between the podcast and the coaching and the farm and all of these different, you know, all of these different avenues. And so I'm able to start saying maybe when someone asks me to do something, speaking, for example. You guys know that I started speaking professionally and started getting asked to go to conferences and share, not necessarily share my story. I have a lot of different topics. Again, it's not just storytelling. It's a message with the story. And so I've been able to start saying, okay, maybe I can do this. Maybe I can go and speak. I'm going to go to Fargo in August and speak at a conference there. And it's August on a flower farm and it's in the middle of the week and I have subscriptions, but it's fine because I have a team. I have a team of, you know, amazing employees that are going to handle it, and they know exactly what's expected of them. They know exactly, you know, how many bouquets we need, what needs to be done, the task list. We have a checklist. Like, it's a system that's in place. And so it's so exciting to be able to start saying maybe with where I'm at. But I would have never gotten here if I didn't say yes to something I had no business saying yes to, let's be honest. So whatever you're doing, whatever you're afraid to do, think about how long it would take you to recover if you did mess up. Think about the absolute worst case scenario. For me, with these Easter flowers, the absolute worst case scenario would have been, you know, I collected this money and, you know, we didn't have them done on time. People got here and they're not done, or we didn't get them put in water right away, or we left the garage door open overnight accidentally and all the flowers froze, or we would have started loading up my Durango with all the seats folded down because we had to bring 70 bouquets to one of the nursing home facilities that's 90 miles away. And we couldn't realize all of a sudden we cannot fit them all in my car, and now we have to take a second vehicle. Like, again, these are all, they would have been minor inconveniences, but none of them would have been a deal breaker, I guess, if the flowers had all died. But it, I don't know, like, what is the, you know, if you're going to spend all this time worrying about worst case scenario, you owe it to yourself to also think about the best case scenario. You owe that to yourself. And I think that looking at the upside and what is the likelihood, odds are it's not going to be worst case scenario. It's not going to be best case scenario. It's going to be somewhere in between, but it's probably going to be closer to the best case scenario than the worst case scenario. And so look at what this could turn into. Look at the opportunity cost of not doing something. I did that Easter bouquet, and then, you know, a month later we did 100 bouquets for Mother's Day, and that was no big deal. 100 wholesale. Now where I'm at in my business, I have my high tunnels because I want to use my own flowers for Easter. I want to use my own flowers for Mother's Day because it's just not profitable enough. And it's not an accurate reflection of what my flowers look like. A $30 bouquet of wholesale flowers compared to what I grow, it's not the same. And so, you know, I think if there's something that you're holding back on, just think about, you owe it to yourself to, what's the worst that could happen? What's the best that could happen? And had I not done those Easter flowers, like, I don't think I would have planted the garden. Like, I don't think it would have turned into any of this, the podcast, the coaching, any of it, let alone the flower farm. I mean, yeah, it's just amazing. And so I want you to send this episode to a friend, or take a screenshot of this episode and post it in your Instagram stories and tag us, and just show me that there is something you are going to do, and you're going to do it scared, and you're going to do it not knowing how you're going to do it, but you're going to say yes. You're going to look for the opportunity, and you're not going to let the fear of failure holding you back. Because what is failure? What does failure look like? And you know what? Even if I lost $5,000, how long would it take me to recover from that? A year? 6 months? I don't know. I mean, it's a failure. It's a big deal. But is it really, really such a big deal? I mean, I look back at grad school and I almost failed a class. It was tough. Okay. My graduate program was hard. And when I say failed a class, all of our exams were proctored. They were only 25 questions long, and you had to average 81% on all exams in order to pass the class. Even if you had a 90% in the class, if you didn't average 81%, then you failed on the tests. then you failed the course. And so if there's only 25 questions, if you get 5 questions wrong out of 25, then you're at an 80%, and that's failing. You could only get 4 questions wrong out of 25, and they were hard. This is nurse practitioner school. This is proctored. This is not an open book test. There are no resources. There are no references. And people failed. We had like a 40% failure rate. In fact, it was a little bit, when I was in the program, they've actually kind of revamped it, because taking people's money and that much of a failure rate is a little bit on the school, if you ask me. And that was definitely scary. So there were a lot of finals that I went in. There was one final one semester, and it was when I was pregnant with Vidalia. And I went into the test and I could get one question wrong. I could miss one question on that exam. And it was like 200 pages of content. And it was like, you know, what kind of test do you order for this or that? And it was terrifying. But if I could go back and tell myself 6 years ago, 7 years ago, whatever that was, 7 years ago now, I think, Liz, it's going to be fine. And even if you fail, so what? What does the recovery look like? The recovery is, yes, that class is only offered in the fall. Yes, you've already put 3 years into a 5-year program. Yes, it would suck. But you're going to spend time with your daughter. You're going to work full-time as RN for that year. You're going to figure it out, and then you're going to take the class again in the next fall, and everything will be delayed by a year, but it's no big deal. It's 1 year. Yep, the class cost $4,000 or whatever it was, because those credits are like $1,000 a credit at least for graduate credits. So it's like, yep, it's going to cost you money. It's going to cost time. It's going to cost whatever that opportunity cost. But in the grand scheme of things, it's a year on the blimp of a radar. And I didn't fail. I ended up passing the test. I ended up passing the class. I ended up graduating on time. I ended up, you know, loving that career for the time that I had and the life that I used to have at the time. But again, I wish I could just go back and tell myself, like, this isn't the end of the world if you do fail. You know, try your best, still continue, but the worst case scenario really isn't all that bad in the grand scheme of things. And I wish I could tell myself that, because then I wouldn't have been living and functioning in a place of fear. So thank you for listening. I hope that this episode was helpful, interesting. I'm going to post some pictures of all of the bouquets and the flowers. It just really is such a nostalgic time of the year for me. I'm going to send this episode to Tom. We'll see if he takes a listen. I originally wanted to have him come on the podcast, but just logistics. He's a busy guy and I'm a busy person and trying to figure that all out. But again, thank you so much to him. Like, he can pat himself on the shoulder like, wow, I helped her create this entire business. And truly, if it wasn't for that one email, we would not have Sunny Mary Meadow anymore. So thank you guys so much. And just don't say no to an opportunity, because you never know what it's going to lead to. You can say no, but don't say no without thinking about it first. Thanks. Thanks for listening to the Sunny Mary Meadow podcast. I'm your host, Liz. If you like what you're hearing, please subscribe and rate us. You can find us on Instagram, Pinterest, and Facebook at Sunny Mary Meadow. Subscribe to our email newsletter at sunnymarymeadow.com. And if you have questions or comments or anything to say, we would love to hear from you. You can email us at podcast@sunnymarymeadow.com.
Flowers, flowers, we love flowers. Sunny Mary Meadow, they smell so good. sunnymarymeadow.com.